Welcome and thank you for joining us this evening for what promises to be a very informative series on a timely topic, maintaining safety and independence at home, with the interrelated challenge of caring for parents while fulfilling the mitzvah Pivud Avaim. A veteran caregiver myself for over 15 years, I know from firsthand experience that these matters are ongoing and of serious concern to those that are or should have been here this evening, and in general have the responsibility of caring for elders. Mr. Sharp is to be lauded and applauded for selecting this important subject, sponsoring the program, and bringing it to the community as a community service. Our first presenter, Rav Shlomo Mendel Shlipa, is a very well-known great Talmid Chacham, an outstanding educator, fully committed to Habatzas Torah. But what may not be so well-known is that he has kishronos and expertise in human relations and shalom bias issues. Combining all these talents, knowledge, and expertise, we are indeed very fortunate this evening that he has agreed to address us with hadrocha and chizuk on the topic of caring for our elders and mitzvahs kibud av v'em. The Rav needs to leave promptly at 8:30 to give another shiur, so if there are any questions, we'd like to reserve the remarks for later. Without any further ado, I am honored and privileged to introduce Rav Shlomo Mendel Shlita, Rosh HaYeshiva, Yeshiva and the Sifta of Brooklyn, caring for our elders and Kibud Av V'Em, challenges and opportunities for fulfilling the mitzvah.
First of all, Peskin B'Chavad Achsanya, I'd like to thank Masharif. He really, together with Reuven, has facilitated something to me that I really haven't gotten into that deep before. I was sitting around the house today and yesterday with the Sforum opened all over the place. The mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, on the surface, and maybe even deeper than the surface, is really not any different than any mitzvah. We started saying Pirkei Avos lately. Hananya ben Akasha Oymer Rotza Kodesh Baruch Hu Lezakris Es Yisrael. The Ribbono Shel Olam wanted either Yilul Lezakris means to purify, or Lezakris to give us chusim. Lefichach Hirbo Lehem Torah Mitzvahs. Therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam has given us an abundance of Torah Mitzvahs. And yet, Mitzvah's Kibud Av V'Em is set aside in many different ways. First of all, we know that before the Rebbein Shem gave us even the Aseres HaDibros, he already was Mitzava B'Mora on the Mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. There's a Rashi in Parshas Lech Lecha that alludes to the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam changed a certain sequence in the Torah. Parshas Lech Lecha is really not starting where it belongs. The Ribbono Shel Olam changed a certain sequence because people shouldn't feel that there was a deficiency in the Kibud Av V'Em of Avraham Avinu leaving an older father. And therefore the Torah was set up in such a way that it talks about the passing of Terach already in the end of Parshas Noach. Because how could Avraham Avinu, as important as his trip was, as crucial as it was to the building of a Klal Yisrael, how do you leave an old father? And Chazal HaMasbeh, why did it really take place? The mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, especially as they move on in age, is a gold mine. It's a gold mine. I must tell you honestly that in my own private life, I was left with a half a mind. I never had the schia to see my mother reach the age of where I could be mekayim kibud aim at an older age. She passed away as a young woman of 34 and a half years old, leaving over 7 children aged 7 months to 13 and a half. On the other half of the coin, the Rebbe was very kind to us. I was zeichet to a father who lived to be over 90 years old. And though he was a very independent man and left an indelible mark on was probably tens of thousands of people, as he moved on in age, and especially the last number of years, I was confronted many a time with shilas that needed really, really deep interpretation. The gold mine of Kibud Av V'Aim is Bazeh Ubaba, in this world and in the world to come. It's one of the only two mitzvahs that the Torah tells us, the Matan Schar B'Tzida. Let me share with you a nice little story. This goes back, was probably close to 35 years ago. I was, relatively speaking, officiating a man and got married not long before, a number of years before, but not that many years before. My in-laws lived on the east side, and they lived right across the street of the shul on the corner of Essex and I think it's Clinton. Rabbi Yoshri was the rabbi of that shul. And lo and behold, the east side, at least that part of the east side, wasn't as vibrant as it used to be. My in-laws lived before that on 1st Avenue and 2nd Street. Then they moved over to this part, the lower east side. But this Bes Medrash HaGadol, I think it's called, somehow or other had a continuous minion going on, a minion factory, like they call today. The Flatbush version, the east side version of Landau's. And I came to Daven Mincha there. And I see a Yidala that my guess was that he wasn't a day under 90 or 95. And he's running around like a spring chicken. I'm krechtzing and he's running around. And he's bringing in a tzenta to every minion. And sometimes a seventh one too. I needed to know a little bit about this Yid. So I went over to Mechuvah the Yid. I said, tell me, what's the story with this shamus over here? He says, you're talking about Rabbi Avraham? I says, yes, Rabbi Pivovitz, tell me about the story. He says, what do you need to know? I said, there's something strange. This man is running around like a 30-year-old. And he steps in a minion, another minion, and he's moving. And where does he get his energy from? I mean, he says, you know, when he was about 85 years old, we asked him the question. And he looked at us. He says, it's a mafurish apostle in the Seres Adibis. Kabbal es avicha v'esimecha l'aman yarichu n'yamecha. And we said, come on, Rabbi Avraham, everybody's mekayim that mitzvah. Oh, he said, there's mekayim and there's mekayim. So we asked him, explain yourself. He says, Rabbi Pivovitz, from the moment on the Aldaiti, from the moment that I became a mature young man, I never, ever said the word no to a parent. So we said to him, Rabbi Avraham, you're exaggerating. You're exaggerating. He says, I'll prove it to you. You people are too young, he says, to remember the Great Depression. I was a very, very successful businessman before the Depression. And when the Depression hit, I found myself saddled with $100,000 of chovos in 1929. And as an astute businessman as I was, there was no way I could dig out of this hole. And the United States of America is a gold in a medina. And if you're losing gold, it's also a gold in a medina. There's a beautiful world called the world of bankruptcy. And everybody was going bankrupt. And Yiddish is called Megate Mechula. So I decided I owed $100,000. What I was going to do? So I was entertained very seriously going bankrupt. And my father called me over and said, Avrumala, my father didn't say, don't go bankrupt. He didn't forbid me. He didn't reprimand me. He told me it's not a very nice thing for a firm year to go bankrupt. For the next 10 years, I slaved like a dog so that my father shouldn't think I did something that's not their share. Until I paid back $100,000. And the Torah says, L'man yarichu nimecha. And it would seem a bit perplexing. Why does the Torah award, why did the Rebbe Shem award people with such gewaltige schar for what seems to be quite a logical mitzvah? And I think any of us that have to deal with parents that become a little bit older, the question becomes diminished day by day, week by week, month by month, and definitely year by year. My wife asked me today at supper, so what would you like they should do when you get old? I said, that's a loaded question, you answer it first. I was very strong on ladies first tonight. It's very interesting. The Kibbud Av, which seems to be a very logical mitzvah. I won't go into the length of the discussion of the Chinuch. And yet the Rambam writes the following. When the Rambam presents in Hilchos Mamrim a very difficult situation of Kibbud Av V'Em, where parents did something that borders upon, it's a shaila, they're shaila, does this mean that the parent was insane, senile, completely, partially? And then the Rambam says, you're not even allowed to l'yachlam oisad, you're not allowed to cause them any embarrassment because of what they did. Ela yishtoik, a person has to be quiet, completely. If your question is, how does one react, or how does one refrain from reacting? The answer is simple. That's what the boss said. That's what the Melech Malchei Hamlochim said. And I never found this lashon in the Rambam by any mitzvah. Not by Shatnez, not by Chazen, not by Paraduma. She'ilu melech boss of Adam goes the ola of Dovashu mitztai yesem is there. If a melech boss of Adam were to decree something upon me that caused me tremendous pain, more than pain than this, lehoya liyachal lefarches bedava, you couldn't utter a word of disagreement. Kal v'chaymel misha'ama v'hoya ha'oilam v'tzoynai. The Rambam doesn't offer any answers. He says there is no kasha. And how befittingly is it that the Ribbono Shel Olam handed us on the same plate, Memara, the mitzvah of Kibbud Av, and the mitzvah of Paraduma. And I always thought Paraduma was the one that defies human logic. When you learn this Rambam, it's a toss-up. Showing proper respect and care and interest and feeling for a parent. I'd like to put aside the Hakaras HaToiv aspect, which is something that the Rishonim talk about. The Rambam says, this is what the Melech Malchei Hamlochim decreed. And when a person lives up to the challenge, I could tell you in my own personal life, I've cried in anguish, not knowing at times how to react. I had a meeting in my own home. I have to leave some of the particulars out because I'm being taped. You know, usually people say there was a gadol in my house, and who made him a gadol because he came to your house? Because someone that's universally recognizes from the handful of gedolei hadar that we have in America. He came to my house because I was faced with a very strong dilemma. A woman came to me with a shaila. And this is one of the shailas that have to be faced by all of us. at one time or another with elderly parents. She had a living mother who was very vibrant, very alert, very with it. And her mother was living with her. Her mother definitely at that time was in her 80s, maybe late 80s. And the situation was unbearable. Unbearable. She had a household of children, and the grandmother, being a very critical person, and not from today's door, had one way of chinuch. And that was called Yemin Merachik, Usmoil Merachik. Double-fisted woman. Sharp like a needle. Verbal like a parrot. No qualms about saying whatever she thought. The second she thought of a good line, it went much more than skin deep. And this woman was starting to lose her children. I don't mean her relationship with her children. They were starting to look for greener pastures. If this is what Yiddishkeit demands, to bringing a grandparent into the home, and no appreciation at all what was done for her, but constantly destroying young kids and one or two children at least with problems. And this young woman cried to me. And I called in one of the Gedolei Hador into the Shul, and he says, I will meet her in your home. And he did. And I pained. I pained for her. I pained for her children. But I pained for the grandmother. And eventually the psak was she cannot be in the home. Very hurting. And yet this young woman was ready to keep her mother there. If that's what the halacha dictated. How many times are we faced with a dilemma between a spouse and a parent? I've seen homes destroyed. Where's your allegiance? How come you don't back me? I just dealt now with a situation, terrible situation. Some children can't even come into the house. Some husbands, and in some cases some wives, believe that the spouse is sold out on them. Chazal have a lashon, oily miyitzri v'oily miyitzri. There is no comfortable position in the bed. We daven constantly. Al tashlicheini leizikno. We don't ask not to become old. We ask not to be forsaken. I must tell you, as I was preparing, I knew that I once spoke on Kibbutz Alvei, not this aspect of it. I went searching through all my Baruch Hashem, thousands of pages of Ksavim. I came across a ma'isa that I witnessed 15 years ago, and I forgot all about it. Because I must tell you honestly, to be mekayim Kibbutz Alvei, especially when they're older, and to do it with a grunt, and with a krechts, with, you know, I'm reminded, I have to share this story with you. My father, as I said, used to tell the story of an older person. He was already more in that world than in this world. He was a wealthy man. He left over a few $1 million. And as he's filtering out of this world already, he hears his four sons talking. And one says to the other, he says, you know, Dad was so good to us. He was so good to us. We should really make him a royal funeral. We should make something real nice for him. Who needs his money? Left over $2 million. You need $500,000. I need $500,000. You know, we could get away, really, we could get away with a lot less than that. You know, let's take $500,000 and blow it on this funeral. We'll make it the most gorgeous thing. He'll be proud of us. And they all agreed. They're going to spend $500,000 on this funeral. There's going to be a ticker tape parade. There'll be limousines. There'll be flowers. One of a kind, you know. It's going to be something beautiful. And then one of them says, Joe, you know, I think you're getting carried away. And this man is listening to this. As he's already about to stop him, he's listening to this. One says, Joe, you're getting carried away. I've never seen a funeral cost $500,000. I don't think it's possible to do it even. Why waste the money? I think we could do a beautiful funeral for $200,000. And, you know, and they'll be proud of us. They really will. The person says, you know what? I think you're right. I think you're right. Dad wouldn't want us to throw out the money. The third one, Charlie says, fellas, I don't know what got into you. You're going on a guilt trip? I think we could cut out a lot of the stuff. And for 30, 40 grand, we could do a real nice job. And, you know, we'll get involved ourselves. You know what I mean? By the time the fourth son was asked his piece, he says, I think that for about $300, $400, we can do a good job. We'll carry the thing ourselves. You know, I'm a very good carpenter. I'll make the box myself. And, oh, you should see how I am. What earth are my tomatoes? I know how to... All of a sudden, they see that the old man is going like this. So he says, who's his papa? He says, get me the other hoisen, the chalalain guy. Give me my pants. I'll go myself. I've watched people being mechaber their parents. And I would like to get back to the story that I wanted to relate to you. And you could detect the true, authentic love. I always say it's a covet to mechaber parents. It's an honor. Could you imagine if Rabbi Yashav asked you to take him someplace or take him into a house for it? I would pay who knows what to be able to do it. If you went to Eretz Yisrael, he says a shiur in what they call the caravanas, and there's a fellow drives him in the golf cart. I don't mind putting on a cap. I'm becoming a golf cart driver myself for one evening. But he wouldn't let me near there. It's not a burden. And when there are difficulties, we have to consult halacha. But our attitude has to be, it's a schus. I told you. I didn't have the schus with my mother. I guess I wasn't worthy. 15 years ago, I come into the yeshiva to daven mincha and Kabbalah Shabbos. And I came a bit early. And a very chosh of a yid runs in from outside, and he's carrying a nylon bag with a Pesach de gamatza. And it was closer to Shavuos than it was to Pesach. He's a big marbet stoyra, big tremendous talmud chacham. I said, what are you doing? He had this big smile on his face. I said, what are you doing, Zisha? You know I'm making bar mitzvah tomorrow here. I said, yeah, you have nothing to do now? I reminded myself that my father likes his chopped liver with matzah. And I forgot to get matzah. So I met Avram Pinter, and he said to me that he has a piece of the matzah now. So I said, I want to get it. I run. My boy said, nobody died from eating chopped liver without a matzah. And I'm sure there was 1,000 things to take care of. He was running like they were just mechaber with Matiyana. He's bringing a matzah because his father likes to chop liver with matzah. My father, Zitzel, many years ago, told the following story. In Shiva Brooklyn, there was a girl that was from out of town. She lived in Philadelphia. And she came into the city to Yeshiva. She studied in Yeshiva Brooklyn. And she would come in on Monday morning, and she would leave at Thursday evening. When she came home to Philadelphia, the following announcement took place every single week to all the siblings, everyone out of the kitchen and out of the dining room. I have no choice, but in order to learn, I have to be in New York. But it's a very unfair life. The rest of you have the great zechus. You're so lucky, you're so fortunate. You could have kibbutz av a whole week. These 3 days that I'm home, it's mine. Out. I've seen a lot of these fights. It works a different way. I always have to take out the gun. I did it last week. I mean, when was the last time that you did? Just recently, I had a young woman by me that has nebucha, a house full of difficulties. Her husband's very not well. And there's an old father that's not well. They all quote dumped him on her. And we talked and she said, they think they dumped him on me. They cheated themselves. I walked away with the prize. Sigben Ahele Gihid, his name was Avraham Lechechenova. There's all history to him in the time of the Kivega. Avraham Lechechenova would buy a new kapata once a year. No, not for Pesach. Not for Sukkot. Not for Shoshana. Once a year he used to go and travel to his mother who lived a distance away. She was an almana. And he bought a new bekesha to be able to go visit his mother. He made the shechiyon on the bekesha because he's going to visit his mother. And he was a gadol that people wouldn't pass in any shalos of agunis without him. So when he came to his town where his mother was, there were 50 to 100 rabbanim always waiting for him. But listen to what happened. This is unreal. He walked into the room and he sat down and all the rabbanim started plying him with questions and shilas. And suddenly his mother walked in and shushked into his ear. She whispered into his ear. He was about 55 years old at that time and she was about 80. And after she said something, she whispered in his ear, he said, she walked out and he says, Eboisai, it's Shuldik to Halbishtunde. And they wanted to know where he's going for Halbishtunde. He says, he's going to the next room to lie down. They said, what happened? He says, the Mamad Yizuk, Avraham Allah Mistam Bistabis Loizia Medik from the Furach, like the Chsiyavisla. His mother told him, Mistam, you wiped out from the trip. He should really lie down. He says, I have no choice. I'm going to lie down. So the Rabbanim should wait for him. I can just imagine that happened today. Where does this stem from? Let me share with you a very interesting insight in Chazal. Yaakov Avinu, after being separated from Yosef so many years, he's coming down to Mitzrayim. Shteitin Pasik by Yeser Yosef. Yosef himself prepared his chariot to go visit his father. In Pirkei Avot, Chazal say, what's happening here? He's a Shein of a Melech. He has servants galore. And he's a Melech. And I'm quoting, L'landecha, it teaches you, She'avim shel Adam hu Malkai. You might be the king of all Mitzrayim, and the whole world is in debt to you. But you also have a king. The Tzibroch and Alto Yaakov Avinu that's coming from Canaan is your Melech. And when you're going to meet a melech, you put together the chariot yourself. L'lamdecha. How many times do we think that way? L'lamdecha she'aviv shel adam hu malkai. My father's my king. My mother's my queen. I have to share with you one more chazal and then I found the Das of Canaan that is very, very frightening. I know we learned that you have to be careful not to hurt parents, not to insult them, not to make them feel bad. And there's so many shahs. I might run through just a couple of them and leave you without the answers. Yaakov Avinu, when he's going to meet Esav, says Yaakov Avinu is very worried. He might get killed. Esav might be victorious. So the Das Sakenim, why? Because Esau was Mekayim Kibidav. And he wasn't there to do it. Yaakov Avinu never insulted his parents. He left because his parents told him to leave. Esau is Esau Varasha. He's a Ritzeach. He's Boil Arayas. He's Oivet Avay Dezara. The whole works, the whole nine yards. Yaakov Avinu is Ishtom Yeshivolim. There isn't one iota in the Torah that he didn't execute on to its umpteenth power. It's not even a comparison. And then Yaakov, the Emes to Getit and Emes to Yaakov says there's a good chance that the Rebbe Shlom will side with Esav. For what reason? He's a Koifa Baker. Keep it that way. It's mind-boggling. Yaakov Avinu did something. No. It's a gold mine. And I would like to just leave you with one more thought. You know, we have very perceptive children. My father used to tell the story of an old man that had written over everything to his children, and the Shulchan Kodesh writes that you should never do that. When you're living, do not give over everything. You're strong the shyness for people that do that. Not testimony. That's a fact. And this old man, he didn't have where to stay even. So he knocked on the door, and he told the son that it's very cold outside. He needs a blanket. So the son called in Johnny, his son. He says, Johnny, Zaidi needs a blanket. It's very cold. Go upstairs in the attic, there's an old blanket there. He waits 5 minutes, and 10 minutes, and 15 minutes, and Johnny didn't come down with the blanket. So he goes up, he says, Dad, 1 second, I'll make sure you get that blanket. Goes up to the attic, and he finds Johnny with a scissor, cutting the blanket. He says, Johnny, why didn't you come down with the blanket? He says, Dad, I'm making sure that I have one for you also, when you become old. Our children see. I wish you could have been with me in Eretz Yisrael. Sadak Roisi, his name is Yitzchak Shiner. His mother was in the 90s. His mother-in-law was in the 90s. Daughter of the Birch Shmuel. And they didn't know of each other. They were both senile. And they were both in the house. In the middle of the night, Yitzchakel, Yitzchakel, Yamama, Yamama, like in the middle of the day. And you should have seen that smile. The glory. I don't want to go into too many protein. I hold there's a certain thing that he was Zaycha Shalika Derech HaTeva. Tremendous thing happened a number of years ago. I attribute it directly to that. And the boy said there are many, many difficulties. Let me leave you just with one thought on that. I'm just as much an Amoritz as you. I started looking at the different questions, the different shaylas. A parent is a danger for themselves. And the only way to make sure that they're not dangerous to themselves is to tie them up to the chair or to the bed. Are you allowed to do that? A parent needs an injection every day. Insulin, whatever it may be. Are you allowed to do that? A parent wants to eat things that they shouldn't be eating. The doctor says dangerous for them. And they ask you to get it. What are you supposed to do? Let me tell you a very interesting story. There was a Yid that in his old age concocted in his own mind that he's very needy. He started going around snoring. He started going around collecting. It was a terrible busha for the family. And I must tell you, he's open to Eichelzein. I'm also guilty of that. So many times we make decisions based on our embarrassment and what would make us feel better, and you know what's the belt going to say when we decide whether a parent is going to be in our home or not in our home, whether we bring them to a simcha, and sometimes we shut parents, mommy shut them up and close them off from the whole tzibur. Whose covet are we preserving? We have to think sometimes. Is it theirs or is it ours? And this Yid was walking around collecting, going around collecting. And the family came up with a fantastic idea. This was in Eretz Yisrael. They're going to send them a letter from Bituach Leumi, which is the national, National Health. They're going to send them a letter. And if the letter is going to say that they heard that he has added income because he goes around collecting, they're going to cut off his Bituach Leumi. Are they allowed to send him such a letter? Person has parents that are not thrown. Is he allowed to take away? Is he allowed to break his father's razor blade? It says that Vachli Imenu stole the Tafim, right? Off in a Gaia. Everybody said, what about the Zara Kodesh that says that that's why she died early? And what about other Mephashim that say that's not the reason she died early? Are you allowed about to tell a parent, and I had this as a personal experience. Parents are a little bit tighter on money than the children, because the children got to be, you know, they're getting a Yerusha. They didn't work for it. He's a little tighter. And he's living in this cramped apartment. And it's mamish detrimental to him. So you're going to find a different apartment, and you'll tell him that you found a mitzia. It's only $900 rent. It's $2,300 rent. He doesn't know exactly what's happening with the account. You'll pay the extra $1,400 a month from his money. Are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed to wake him up for a minyan? He fell asleep in the middle of eating. Are you allowed to wake him up for benching? Should I take him to a simcha that I'm making? I've had this dilemma many, many times. He says he has no koyach. I said, no, it's good for him. Is that the reason I'm taking it, because it's good for him? I went to speak to Chaim Kanievsky, and my father became not well. I said, there's a tremendous shaila. And everybody seems to be, you know, Monday morning quarterback on it. Everybody seems to have a day. I have a little experience. I knew I had no day. Am I allowed to tell him his situation? Should I not tell him? Should I tell other people to daven for him? Should I be mefarshim, not be mefarshim? I'm bedafka not giving answers, because each one of them would take 10, 15 minutes. On a few of them, I do have answers. But it's late. My other shit's waiting. That a person that's zoichet to have all the parents, it's a tremendous chiyah. And I would direct all of you to look at the Rabbeinu Bechaya in Parshas Yisrael. It's a phenomenal shtickle. Phenomenal shtickle. If you learn that piece and digest it, you'll never krecht when you have to serve a parent in their old age. You'll dance. When you're doing it. The Bamsha should be Mzakos in Yishan, but Yizunt and Arichas Yomim. And Mazal Zoycha Zayim Yishan, Zalman Yarich and Yomecho, Sai Borem Azeh, Sai Borem Abo. And all of us in Yit Hashem should be Zoycha that our children should know the right answers. And when we should go in old age in Yishan, when we should reach old age, Zal Zayim Yishan, Oy Yinuvim Seva, Yishanim Bananam Yiu, Hagit Yosha Hashem. Everything else.
Thank you very much. Thank you very My relationship with our next speaker begins from before he was born. His father and I were in the same shir in yeshiva for a number of years, and we have been mispalim in the same base medrash and neighbors even longer. It would be considered incidental to this evening's program, other than the fact that Chaskel Bennett is an Askun, always on the run. So this contexture that I have, this advantage, benefited me in contacting him and ultimately will benefit this audience. As we learn from his first-hand experience as a Hatzalah dispatcher of 18 years and from some of his personal observations from his own family, lessons in elder care, in preventing calamities, Chas v'Shalom, and maintaining a safe home environment. One added footnote. When I finally reached Chaskel and explained the purpose of my call, he didn't just jump and say, fine. He needed time to consider whether he could make a contribution to the program that will be meaningful. He accepted the invitation only after careful deliberation that he has a message to transmit. We look forward to hearing his message, Haskell Bennett, EMT dispatcher, Hatzalah of Flatbush. Case studies, lessons from the field.
Thank you, Rabbi Ruvain. Good evening. I'd like to thank the Tarot Avot facility. I've been here more than once, more than twice, late at night when nobody knew I was here except the patient. Staff is very good, by the way, here. They know what they're supposed to do. We were asked to come and participate to give some real-life experience. Funny, I'm being asked to give real-life experience. I guess that means I've seen some real-life experience. So, I start off with one very important issue. Hatzalah in this audience doesn't have to be explained because everybody knows what Hatzalah is. Sometimes I go around the country and maybe they need it to be explained in Boca Raton, Florida to a group of young kids. Who's Hatzalah? What's Hatzalah? But to a flappish crowd, and whoever may be listening on this recording, so you all know who Hatzalah is. But to humor ourselves, let's understand that the greatness or the godless of the Hatzalah system is the speed in which the response is made. Call the phone number, and within a few moments, which to the patient feels like hours, but in reality, in many cases, Baruch Hashem, the legendary response of Hatzalah is what makes Hatzalah Hatzalah, secondary to its care and concern and compassion. We hope everybody has that. So we're missing something. What we're missing is that people panic in emergencies. And it's natural for people to panic. We're not going to be able to stop people from panicking because an emergency is just that. It's an emergency. So what steps can we take to prevent that panic from becoming a disaster? I've seen disasters. A husband collapses. A wife is frantic. She doesn't know the phone number to Hatzalah. That's not the time to first call your daughter, wherever she might be, what's the number to Hatzalah? I mean, we could have the most sophisticated ambulances and drugs, EKGs, defibrillators, you name it, we've got it. But if you can't access it, kunishka helfen. So the first thing that I taught a 10th grade class when I gave a first aid class to Yeshiva Shaar Torah in Queens, what's the phone number to Hatzalah? And I asked them to raise their hands. 35 boys, smart guys. I think one maybe knew it. And I said, from Leilam Vod, as long as you're a student in my class, every test that we're going to have, the first question is going to be an extra credit question. I want the phone number to Hatzalah. The reason I bring the story up is I must have taught this class 15 years ago, and one of my students came over to me, "Hello, Mr. Bennett." When somebody calls me Mr. Bennett, I take notice because nobody calls me Mr. Bennett. I still remember the phone number to Hatzalah. Baruch Hashem, I haven't needed it. First thing people need to know and to understand is that they're not going to remember things in an emergency, and therefore they need to prepare for the emergency. Hatzalah stickers, which I did bring with me, is the easiest, most effective way to remember the number to Hatzalah Rahman Islam in an emergency. And if Chas V'Shalom, the person whose house it is not the one who's calling Hatzalah because they're the patient, and a neighbor or a friend or a relative happens to be in the house, or a son-in-law came to visit, not always so pashut that they know the address of where they are sitting in. It's Ma's house. It's Ta's house. But what's the real address? So a number of very practical pieces of advice are as follows. Make it very good practice in my own home. And I suggest you all do the same. Hatzalah numbers, Hatzalah stickers, if possible to remember the memory of it. if that's not possible, and it very well might not be, I would suggest Hot Solo stickers anywhere and everywhere you can think of. It goes along with the Yiddish stoop. Hot Solo stickers belong on every phone in every Yiddish house. We have what we call caller ID. It's a very simple, simplistic feature. Every single phone number cannot, in the Verizon system, the New York City system at least, has a caller ID. When we tinker with it, we block it, we private it, we play around with the system. But the system itself allows for caller ID. For those of you who are not familiar, caller ID system has now been integrated into the Hot Solo phone system. That means that every phone call that comes into the dispatcher, the phone number comes up. Not only does the phone number come up, in many, many cases, the address will come up as well. But if a phone is blocked, it only comes up as private. Those are precious seconds that could come to help somebody in a very big way. So, where you must block your private, call private your phone, so I can't get involved in your personal situation, but where you can unblock phones, unblocking a phone can be the difference between life and death, where the dispatcher can get the address and all the information immediately within 3 or 4 seconds of the phone call coming into the Hot Solo dispatcher. By the telephone, emergency contact numbers. Someone was found a diabetic patient who's now unconscious. Patient who fainted. An unconscious patient can't give you information who to call, who are you, what's wrong with you, what's your history. In many cases, many people live alone. In many cases, a patient may live alone. How is this patient going to provide good answers if this patient is sick now? We should be preparing for the unfortunate circumstance that may occur. The patient is on medication. The responders want to know about those medications. The patient has a history. The responders want to know about that. The patient has a doctor. The responders want to know about that. All the information one would think that a responder would want to know in times of emergencies is information that must be transcribed onto a piece of paper, visible by a telephone. It's good practice, and it could come to save your life. Illuminating an outside address. The most frustrating thing for a Hot Solo responder. The most frustrating thing. In the middle of the night, or even the daytime. You know somebody is in need. You know that it's a serious emergency. You've run across Ocean Parkway. You've traveled at warp speed to get to the block of where you know the call is. You simply cannot find the call because small effort wasn't made to illuminate the address of the house. Rabbi Isai, it's not the Hot Solo number who's insulted that if you don't put your address up, you can help yourself and potentially save yourself or your loved ones by taking time and effort, putting up the address, making sure it's illuminated, it's visible. It's the most unnerving thing. Common sense. Common sense. Anything and everything that you think that a Hot Solo member would want to know about you is something that should be visible and it should be put in a place where, Rahman al-Islam, if you were incapacitated or you were unable to verbalize this information, or even a home health care aide wouldn't really know necessarily a lot of this information. It's a temp, she really doesn't speak the language well, etc., etc. All of this information is elementary, yet so huge, so significant towards a very, very good outcome. Just to talk briefly, it's very interesting, I was looking at the handout. Look, there's a beautiful handout here. I just went through it for a few minutes. Mamish, what I took, what I thought of, what could I say in 15 or 20 minutes, just to impart some things that are just unnerving, preventable. That's really That's really the trick. Preventable problems, things that didn't have to be, could have been prevented, could have been avoided. If we help one person here who's listening to this tonight, it would have been really worth it. The thing I chose to pick was not cardiac or strokes, which, Baruch Hashem, people already have some knowledge on how what they need to do to live healthier lifestyles. Slips and falls. Slips and falls create so much havoc for the elderly patient because the recovery and the pain is just so overwhelmingly difficult. Slips and falls lead to fractures, specifically hip fractures, very hard to heal from, very hard to rehab, and really a sophisticated elderly person knows this very well and does everything they can to do whatever needs to be done to protect themselves. But some small things that I've noticed that haven't been done that have caused slips and falls, and in other areas, Baruch Hashem, people are being wise about it. And again, the handout is far more sophisticated than I could ever be. Really was well thought out. This was just, I put this together just for your listening pleasure for a few moments. But the gist of it is the same. We have a problem called slips and falls. And we know what happens when people fall and hurt themselves very badly. Causes of slips and falls. Loss of balance due to a medical problem, or loss of balance due to a slippery situation, or a cord, or a unsteady carpet. So we know what the problems are. How do we prevent these issues? I have found repeatedly that many serious calls take place in the restroom, in the bathrooms. Usually the floors are not carpeted. Usually they're slippery. Naturally a bathroom gets wet. The combination of a wet floor and a slippery surface poses disastrous consequences. Floor mats. Simple. It's a simple situation. It's a simple solution. Suction cup floor mats. It doesn't move. In the bath, in the shower, out of the shower. We're not looking for fancy, we're looking for usable, we're looking for situations that prevent problems. Buy two, buy three. It's not a cosmetic, we're not going for the cosmetic look. We're going for the safe way. Suggestion that if a bathtub or a shower area can handle it for an elderly person, a chair. They now make very small, usable chairs, plastic, made for inside the shower. People get tired. They get weak. A weakness pull comes over them. Again, small alternatives. Anything that we can do to prevent a slip and fall. In my opinion, and I would suggest in the opinion of anybody who's ever had the unfortunate to pick up a patient or to transport a patient who has fallen and has chas v'shalom fractured their hip or has seriously hurt themselves. The best friend of an elderly patient, I take that back, the best friend of an elderly person is a bar. This is the single best friend of every patient, of every elderly person out there. Strategically placed bars, hand bars, that could either be suction mounted or could be hard mounted, anywhere and everywhere. In the bathroom, in the bathtub, near the toilets, near the sinks, something to reach out for, something to steady themselves. You all have known that you sometimes you just get a little bit dizzy. It happens to young people as well. Just for some reason you lose your balance or your equilibrium for a moment. To have that bar there when you need it makes all the difference in the world. So I take the idea of the bar. I have no investment in the bar company, but I take the idea of the bar and I bring it even further. I remember, just to bring a real-life practical example, I remember my grandfather, Olav Shalom, had Parkinson's. It was very difficult for him to study himself. He could never really study himself. But he was a very wise man. And he hired a carpenter, a nice long upstairs hallway, he hired a carpenter to mount a piece of wood that you use on the staircase, like a banister, straight banister, all the way across the hallway. And it was a way for him to always know that no matter what, if he felt like he was falling, he always had somewhere to hold on to. Two other places that I find also very effective, hand bars at the bottom of the steps and at the top of the steps. Just at that top of the step to have something to hold on to other than the banister as a person pulls himself up. Again, strategically placed, not expensive. The investment is so minimal and the benefits are very, very important and very, very huge. A couple of other things we'd like to just discuss before we conclude. Carbon monoxide detectors, very important. Not necessarily for the elderly patient themselves, but the elderly patient has enough rights to themselves to make sure that there is one in the home. We just there was a story a few days ago in Queens of a gas leak that Rahman Aslan turned into a disaster. Somebody lost their life. It happens. Certainly, everybody has the capability of leaving the gas on by the range. And the elderly person living at home certainly has that potential. Carbon monoxide detectors are the difference between life and death. Carbon monoxide cannot be smelled. It is a deadly, lethal gas smell, odorless smell, odorless gas that can potentially wreak havoc on a person. And a carbon monoxide detector costs no more than $10. And it's something that I find to be extremely useful and important and it's very effective in doing the right thing. And lastly, the lifeline cord, the lifeline pendant. I'm a big proponent of it. I've seen it save lives. It's a little pendant that goes around that you can pay a company. I don't suggest any company over another. But the lifeline pendant where the elderly person has the ability to call for help no matter when, no matter where they are. I have unfortunately been on Hatzalah calls where a neighbor didn't see a friend for 2 or 3 days only to find that the patient has been lying on the floor in the home for 2 days or 3 days screaming for help. Fell, fractured their hip, couldn't get up. Literally, wasting away on the floor until somebody noticed that they were missing. These small but very, very important pendants can be a life and death difference. Again, everything that we're discussing here is common sense, things that the Hatzalah member wants very much to see all of the people use in order that Mitzvah Shem, the Baruch Hashem, should continue to protect us, give us the seichel to grab the opportunity to help ourselves before it's too late, before we reach a situation that we didn't want to find ourselves in. Thank you. Feel free, I left some stickers here. I will leave them here for whoever would like.
Thank you very much.
This evening's program is modeled after a similar program the Oreth Yomim organized for the Queens community a year or two ago. At that time, Mrs. Judy Brickman, a very well-known social worker and member of our advisory board, suggested that we contact Javi Baron to see whether she might be available that evening. I had not heard her presentation before, but on Judy Brickman's recommendation, she was contacted and agreed to be a member of the panel. As it turned out, her presentation was dazzling. Javi Baron is an outstanding professional. She's an exceptionally credentialed
a master in public health, a physical therapist. She has served as consultant, professor, lecturer, and most importantly, as they say in French, she reads and talks. Not only does she have what to say, but she is a great communicator. I am pleased to introduce Kavi Baron, physical therapist, master of public administration, rehabilitation manager, Revival Home Care, who will address us on the common problems and preventions in home, safe at home, safe and sound at home.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, the Sharp family, for hosting us this evening. My presentation is very much dealing with the handout that you all have, and it deals with safety in the home. And when I go about talking about safety in the home, one of the things that always comes to mind is that while we're thinking of it today in terms of the sandwich generation and our parents, we're all moving up there. And so whatever we do today to protect our parents, we're really doing to protect ourselves as well. In protecting our parents and in preparing our own lives for tomorrow and learning how we can do better for ourselves. Unfortunately, the statistics about falls, as Mr. Bennett has said, keep growing higher and higher. We're roughly 75% of the falls that we see clinically occur in the home. And as it has already been stated, the worst place in the home is the bathroom, and the worst place in the bathroom is the bathtub, which we will talk about. Right now, the senior population is growing. In the year 2000, roughly 25 million people were 65 or older. It is anticipated that by 2030, we're going to be talking about 75 million people. All of these people are going to need caregivers. And who are those caregivers? Well, if you're fortunate enough, the Sharps are your hosts. If you're fortunate, it is your family. If you're fortunate, you will have thought ahead so that you're prepared for it. Because as was stated, the key to protecting yourself is to minimize the risks and to pre-plan. To think today, to look around at your environment and say, how can I make it better for my parents, for my children, for myself, because they all go together. What are some of the main reasons, the main causes for falls? Well, one of it is decreased balance, which can be caused by dozens of reasons. It could be you didn't see clearly. You're wearing those new variable lenses and everything is blurred out of the end. You didn't hear something, so you turned too quickly and you lost your balance. You haven't been feeling well, so you're a little weak. You're not doing as much as you have been doing. You get up, you start teeter-tottering. How many of us have gotten up in the middle of the night, don't know where we are? You get up and you sort of misstep. All it takes is one misstep. You're not feeling so well, you feel a little weaker. Medications. What medications do in a positive way, if we're not aware of it, the potential is there for them to also act in a negative way. And I'm going to leave that to a speaker next week. Dr. Hillel Farmer, a gerontologist, will be here next week, and he'll be addressing more of the impact and the side effects of medications as they're healing you, which you have to be aware of to protect yourself again. Your blood pressure. High blood pressure, low blood pressure, I turned, I got dizzy, I bent down. All of these things can affect your stability and your safety. So we have to consider all of these things, and we have to look ahead, and we have to look around and say, how can we make everything better for us and for you? We take a selfish way, but we make it better for everybody at the same time. Some of the causes of falls have already been identified. The wet floor, big hazard. Walking in the street, one leaf can end up with a break because it too is slippery. Cords, we all have computers now. We have phone lines. We have little things sticking out wherever we go. Got to get them out of the way. Out of the way, tape them, clamp them in with just a little twisty to get it out of the way so that you're not open to catching your foot and tripping. Rugs. I go into some homes, I do home care regularly, and it's like one hazard after another. Because they don't have this wonderful low-ply rug that's all over. They have the one that has a fringe. Nothing has a rubber backing. Nothing has a suction. And so as you're walking, the walker like gets caught, your shoe gets caught, your tap gets caught, your heel gets caught right in. All of these are potential hazards. And so when you do see rugs, or when we see rugs, you try and secure them. There's double-faced tape. There are a lot of things that can be done to reduce the risk of having this beautiful, beautiful area carpet right there. Fire, carbon monoxide. That's been addressed, but it's equally as important to make sure that those carbon monoxide detectors are working. We've all read of homes where there's been a fire. I'm sure you've been in them. Where they have the carbon monoxide and they have the fire alarm, the smoke alarm, the detector, but the batteries were dead. Doesn't help. They should be changed. You should be watching them. Twice a year, a lot of people suggest when the clock changes, the battery changes. Okay? So that's an equally as important thing. Phone lines, I mentioned again. Now with the cell phone and the portable phone, it's less likely, but you still see multiple lines all over. Something that hasn't been mentioned, but that is critical, and that is lighting. Good lighting. As we get older, as our parents get older, our vision isn't as sharp as it used to be. And so the quality of the light can affect how you see things, your perception, the depth. Is it a shadow? Is it real? The lighting should be with the maximum wattage that the area can, that the socket can take. Any bulb that is broken should be changed, that is out. But then you're running into another hazard. What's that hazard? How do you get to the bowl? Well, if it's a lamp, it's not too bad. But if it's up there, you compound the risk by getting up on that step stool, which may be a little rickety, maybe too high. You're not supposed to stand on the step, the top part, but you're still just a little bit too short, and there you are. All right? I've already made it a practice in my own home. I will not get on a step stool unless someone's in the house. Anyone. I want somebody to be there to hear the thud when I fall down. At least there's someone there. But it's a good practice that you don't take chances. It also, as you go up, you lean back, you bend down, your blood pressure changes. And here you are standing on the step stool. So while lighting is important, you have to be protective of yourself when it comes to changing it. I've seen professionally as many falls from looking up, down, too high, climbing, trying to reach something, as I've seen bathrooms. Often in the bathroom where they're trying to do all of those things. Okay, so step stools. Wet surfaces, very, very big thing that we all have. We've all learned how to be squirrels. Very few of our homes are sparse. So we have a little box there, we have another bookcase here, you have another table here. Everything is around. Each thing that is around is a potential hazard. Because while I could be walking right straight here, I just have to drift off a little bit. Oops! And I caught myself. Or I banged into something, which you may want. So that clutter, trying to open up the environment, the area where we're going to be, also helps to add an element of protection so that we don't fall. If there are items around, at least to have them as secure as possible. The grandchildren come over, toys. They're wonderful. You love having them. The toys are there, and the toys always have wheels. Another thing you have to watch for, if they're a pet, another thing. So these are all areas to be aware of. Mr. Bennett, you said if you need the seat of one thing where the bathroom is concerned, I'm going to try and say if we leave one seed and you take one thing away from here that reduces your risk by that little bit of falling, then this evening has been more than just a little worthwhile. One more thing in terms of safety that isn't with falls, but that I've seen too often also is the stove. Shabbos candles is one issue. In terms of caution, as you're lighting them, where fire is concerned. But I have seen people in their homes with long sleeves reaching over a stove that has an open flame. And it's a disaster. So it's very important to be ultra cautious when you're using a flame. As we get older, we become less aware of the most obvious things that we thought we knew when we were younger. Bathrooms, as I said, are the number one enemy in the house. If I had my druthers, there wouldn't be another house built with a bathtub. Unless it had a built-in seat, it had bars, that there were beams where the bars couldn't go. It had ultra-secure towel racks, because everybody reaches for that towel rack. And if you can't quite get up after you've used the toilet bathroom, you reach for the toilet paper, or you go to the sink. People love leaning on sinks, which is fine when you have legs. But you know, a lot of sinks don't have pedestals. They're hooked into the wall. And the only thing that is keeping that sink secure is the plumbing, the elbows underneath the parts of the sink, and the grout. And if you're in an apartment building, the grout might be as old as you are. So it is totally undependable to reach or to lean on these things. Bars are critical, but again, the walls have to be checked that they're going to hold it, that there is a beam there, or that you're not getting a bar being put in where you're going to hit into the plumbing. So they're all pieces to consider, and I'd add one more place for a bar, and there you don't even need a bar, and that's a door handle. It's how many of you have had trouble? You open up the door, you're coming up the steps to your house, and you open up the door, and there's one more step. And that one step you can't do because there's nothing to hold on to. And right along the door jamb, doesn't block the door, a plain old-fashioned Home Depot Lowe's handle, like a drawer handle or a closet handle. It's in the wood, it is solid, and you have something that you can grab to get up that one final step. Okay? Next week, there will be another speaker talking about home adaptation. So I'm not going to go into different styles and different models. But besides the wall bars, there are bars that can be put on the side of the tub if you have to step over. Absolutely no baths, only showers. Getting up from a bathtub is like sitting on the floor with your legs straight out and having nothing really dependable hold on to as you're getting up, because everything that's around you is slippery because it's wet, and air soap, it's doubly slippery. So there's really nothing secure that you can hold on to. Showers are the safest thing. There are different types of shower seats you can get so that you don't have to stand. There are handheld showers that you can use. There are a lot of things that can help adapt the bathroom to limit and reduce the risk of falling. Nobody can guarantee anything, but at least to reduce the problems. As I said, towel racks, soap holders, none of these are secure. One other thing, as we get older, there's another hazard in the bathroom and in the kitchen, but more so in the bathroom where our whole body is potentially exposed, and that's water. That as our ability to differentiate temperatures happens, you go in, you turn on the water. If you're in a private house, you have a better chance of controlling it. You sort of feel it, and it's tepid, and you're okay. If you're in an apartment house, you do the same thing, and all of a sudden, somebody upstairs decides to flush. And you just got yourself a third-degree burn. Okay? So the temperature of the water, the same thing can happen at the kitchen sink as you're washing dishes. But your whole body's not exposed there. So the temperature of the water is something to really be very careful about, and I recommend you go to the tepid and cool side. Take it when your apartment's warm, but avoid hot water. There are some other features that compound safety and all the things that I've mentioned. One is shoes. If you're wearing shoes where you're just flip-flopping around, you're schlepping your feet, you're not lifting them, your chances of tripping over something are just compounded. So your footwear is important. Wearing socks on a polished floor for an older person or a maturing person, because none of us are old, we're all just maturing. Okay? That's enough, that can create an ice skating effect. You're just going to slide along that beautifully polished floor in your socks or stockings. Eyeglasses. If you have them, wear them. You have them because your eye, your vision has been compromised. Wear them. If you have a hearing aid, wear it. Lighting, we talked about floor surfaces. I'm going to add one other thing to floor surfaces. When you're in a facility, in an environment such as this, everything is level. And by that, I don't mean that you're walking along and you don't have to go up steps or down steps, you have an elevator. Remember those things in our homes called door sills? Or that wonderful imported Italian marble that we got that the uses of bathroom that gave us a nice saddle there and a door sill, and you got a 1-inch slip there. Beautiful hazard. Because you're not smooth. You got to go up and you got to go down. Now, again, a lot of my patients say to me, oh, I know it. I've been living here 50 years. I'm not going to fall. Everything is okay. And about half of my fracture patients have fallen over that wedge. They've been living with it for 50 years and know exactly what to do. So it's important to be reminded about these things because it rekindles it that there is a door sill here. On any change in elevation, what I recommend of late, and it really works, it's not pretty, but if you have to choose between aesthetics and safety, I think safety comes first. And that is, get the brightest tape you can find and put it on that little piece of whatever it is that changes in the height of the surface you're walking on. So at the bathroom step, put a piece of tape there. That will, you'll definitely see that there is a step. If you have stairs going up, the middle stairs most people see, that bottom step, they don't, or the top. Right across here at the step, put that bright tape so that you see it and it reduces the risk. Again, I'm not going to say we're eliminating it, but it can greatly reduce it. If you have to change position, which we all do, don't go from a way down to a way up quickly. Move slowly. It limits any type of dizziness. And again, as we mature, we're all taking medications, and among the most common side effects of so many medications is dizziness. And so, to be careful as we're changing positions, again, helps to reduce the risk. It's a wonderful little toy in the stores. I recommend also for everybody. Most of us know it from the local grocery store. It's called a reacher. What the little man went to when he took hold of it, and it had these little teeth that grabbed, which was all the way up on the top floor. Top shelf. Reaches are great. They're inexpensive. The insurances do not cover it, but they're one of the best investments so that when you drop something, you eliminate the bending, you eliminate the dizziness, and a lot of us, as we're getting older, just bending can create problems with breathing, which then creates other problems in our system. You don't have to. You have the reacher. You can get from down there. You can get from up there. We've eliminated bending. We've eliminated extending and throwing our balance off. We've eliminated the step stool, all of which, again, reduce the risk of falls. Most important is if you're home alone. Mr. Bennett did a wonderful presentation in terms of everything you should have available. Emergency numbers, a phone, within easy reach. I remember when my father, Alva Shalom, passed away, we were talking to my mother, who has since joined my dad, and we suggested to her, they had one phone in the house. So we suggested, at least get a phone bedside. And she said, what for? Well, the end result is, which is an important thing, and it comes into what Rob Mandel was saying, and what so many of us have heard repeatedly about, keep it up the aim. And that is, when the parent says no, and yet the safety is compromised, what do you do? I am not a post-it. I do not tell you what to do. I can give you suggestions of how to approach it, But in the end, it's between you and your Rav to find out what is the best way and the way to resolve it. The way we resolved a lot of issues was, you're not doing it for you, you're doing it for us. So that we can have peace of mind and we can feel more comfortable. And it's amazing. Older parents are very happy to keep their children, even adult children, comfortable. I don't need it, but you'll feel better. Okay, I'll go along with it. Doesn't matter how you get them to do it. It's critical that they do it. The PERS system, a personal alert, is equally as critical. I need a personal alert? Why? Why do I need it? What's going to happen? You know what, Mom? You don't need it. I'll say, you know what I did, Mom? I'm home by myself so much. Anything, I got one. She's not going to come to my house to inspect it to see whether I got one, but she got one. Whatever is needed, it's critical. It's a thin line to balance between protecting our parents and being the chabed of parents. And it's a very tough one to balance. But it comes to a point where we have to look at it and say, what's the right thing? What's the best way to approach it? And again, you go back to your rub on it. But it's something that we hopefully will all be fortunate enough to have to address because our parents have our Aruch HaYamim. And bear in mind that our children are going to be addressing for us. So we could be a model for them and hopefully they will treat us in the same way. And with that, I hope we will reach madness. Thank you.
All presenters this evening deserve a round of applause. Clearly, they put great amount of effort, and the audience are the beneficiaries. Thank you very much. Secondly, I should like to remind everyone here this evening that this is part one of a part two series. Next week, same day, same time, Rav Belsky and another group of outstanding professionals will share their advice and expertise on this very important topic. Lastly, but certainly not least, we wish to thank the Sharps, Tarasovos, and Century Home Care for the vision and commitment of sponsoring this outstanding community service event. Yasha Kochachem. Good program.
Not too many ads put out.
Thank you very much.
All right, you got your bench.
I'm not coming back.
I don't know. I'll have to check. Because well, you have to
put this down before I had the final one. I wasn't due. I pressed, I saw it was finished. I pressed open. And I didn't know he was here. So it didn't. Whatever. It didn't do.
I'll find out. I always do this when I get home. Come on. What I got? Let's see. Digital goes all so strong. But I didn't get any kind of the tape stop. Because I didn't.
Well, the digital you got.
I hope. I hope.